Hi, and welcome from our studios in downtown Washington, D.C. This is D.C. Public Safety. I am your host, Leonard Sipes. Today's program is, I think, one of the more important programs that we've done. We're going to be dealing with internet predators. There is a coalition out there with a large number of people involved, but in this particular case, it's the Internet Keep Safe Coalition, and we have Marcelee Hancock, who is the president of the Internet Safe Coalition, at our microphones, and we're going to talk about the entire issue of the Department of Justice and the Internet Keep Safe Coalition, and their web address, by the way, is ikeepsafe.org, and we'll talk about that and repeat that several times throughout the program. Ladies and gentlemen, again, we really appreciate the fact that you're listening and commenting as much as you are and watching us on the video side. We respond to all of your comments. We are now up to 1.5 million requests since the inception of the program, and we are very grateful for all of the information that you provide and all of the suggestions that you provide. Feel free to either Twitter me or to go to the website and email me at leonardsipes@csosa.gov. That's leonard.sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at csosa.gov, or comment through the program. And again, we always appreciate all the things that you are suggesting in terms of improving the program. And with that long, convoluted introduction, Marcelee Hancock, president of the Internet Safe Coalition, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Did I get the name right?
It's so close. It's the Internet Keep Safe Coalition, but the name was right on.
Marcelee. You see, yes, ladies and gentlemen, I was struggling. She's told me Parsley, and it's Marcelee. Marcelee Hancock, president of the Internet Safe Coalition.
Keep Safe.
Keep Safe Coalition. Okay, I need to write that down. Tell me the whole issue of predators, online predators. Now, this is a sticky issue, I think, because we all know that there are sex offenders out there. And yes, we read about sex offenders just about every single day in the newspaper. But my contention is this, and the contention I think of research is this, is that the majority of the people who we call sex offenders are not known to the criminal justice system. And they have a sexual predisposition towards children. They're going to gravitate. They're going to go to where kids are, where minors are. They're either going to go to a playground, they're going to go to a ball game, they're going to go to a library, or they're going to go to the internet, correct?
Correct, absolutely.
Okay, and tell me about that. Why go to the internet?
Well, the internet is a place where children spend time, and a predator who's looking to engage in a child's relationship, they look to the internet to be able to groom them. So it's incredibly rare that someone would be connected to a predator and then by deceit, they would meet them because they pretended to be a young child and their very same age. Usually when you look at the cases of children who've been victimized, it's someone who has groomed them, talked to them, built a relationship, and by the time the child is victimized, they may even know they're a much older adult. So being able to take the time with your children to be sure that you are aware of the people that they're conversing with is really critical.
Well, and that becomes a basic issue of protecting your children. You know, you and I were talking before the program when I would go and try to deal with my daughters in terms of their internet use. And it was like, you know, Dad, you know, I already know about that. When I started talking about sexual predators out there and the fact that they use the internet, and there's a high probability that sooner or later, depending upon your time online, you're going to come into contact with one. And, you know, and again, they were just looking at me like I had 53 heads. And
eye rolling.
You know,
the eye rolling.
Oh, it was like, yes. Oh, Dad, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard anybody say in my entire life. Would you please stop that? Give me my space. Don't you trust me? And you, as a parent, you really have to fight hard, don't you, in terms of making sure your kids are being safe on the internet?
You know, as parents, we have to work hard to be sure that our child is safe about everything in their environment, and that includes the internet. And we didn't have people model to us. My parents didn't model to me how to be a parent in the digital environment. Mm-hmm. So we're the first generation that has to do it. And for many children, and I've had that eye rolling at my house, it's like, oh, Mom, why do you have to be an internet safety person?
There you go. I like that. Say that again. It's
the eye rolling.
Oh, Dad!
But something that can be reassuring is research shows that parents who have a conversation with their child about online risks, those children are six times less likely to be victimized online.
So, and that's what the research says, I think, generally. What we've been saying, we in the criminal justice community have been saying, in the crime prevention community have been saying for years, is that you need to have age-appropriate conversations with your children.
All the way from the beginning.
All the way from the beginning, in terms of the realities that they're going to face. Not to frighten them, but to simply inform them. They've got to know that if something happens to them that makes them either feel uncomfortable or somebody victimizes them, that you are going to be wide open to them coming to you and something that makes them fearful, something that makes them suspicious, or, you know, my God, an actual victimization. That you will always be there for them. There's nothing that they can say, nothing that they can do to scare you as a child away from that communication with their parents. And that's what we were told to say when we were discussing this issue, to be sure that parents had that age-appropriate conversation and that and be sure the child fully understands that it doesn't matter what happens, they come to the parents.
Well, that brings up some very important and critical points. And one is that the child sees you as a resource for help and support. And statistics show that kids don't talk about it when something goes wrong because they're afraid their parents will unplug them from the internet. And their emotional connection to the internet is so big that they would rather suffer alone.
I just realized that. I mean, it's one thing is simply saying that the coach of the football team put their hand where it shouldn't. Maybe it was accidental, maybe it's not. But maybe he loses access to the ball team, and maybe that's a big concern to him. But that just struck me. You've said something that I've never quite understood before, that, I mean, look at my allegiance to the internet. I'm an internet junkie.
So am I.
You know, I mean, between the internet and between, you know, iPods and between, you know, having mobile access to the internet through your BlackBerry or through your iPhone. You know, we love the internet. We're wired to the internet. So are our kids. And so, yeah, I would say that that's probably an amazingly insightful point of view, that if the child says, if I say something about this event that was that caused me a certain amount of discomfort, they're going to stop me from using the internet.
Right. Well, kids are absolutely emotionally connected to their friends through the digital environment. So it's not just the internet. It can be also through their cell phones, through text messaging. And when you pull a child offline, you basically pull them off of their culture, their friends. So it's not like the old days if you just got grounded for a day. It means that all communication between teens sometimes shuts down if they don't have access to the digital environment. So what happens with this environment is if children feel like they're going to lose access to their friends and their emotional support that they get through the internet, through their friends, then they're not going to come to you when they have something that's gone wrong. So the goal of the parent is to be a springboard of support, which means you start conversations early, help them recognize the true nature of the internet. So the internet is never private. And the children who get into the biggest trouble online are already the kids who are at risk offline. So it's the kids whose parents don't communicate with them are at the greatest risk. So if you can be a parent who gets activated and engaged in your child's digital life, you reduce their odds of being victimized exponentially.
Well, that always seems to be the key issue here. Having that frank, age-appropriate, non-fearful conversation, starting off at what age? 3?
As they learn to use technology, that's when you start conversations. Right. And the more you talk to your child, the better your conversations will be. And they're not just those one little random conversations every now and then of, so what are you doing online?
Okay.
But kids talk to each other about digital technology all the time in overlapping conversations. So they're tutoring each other about digital conversations.
Right.
So as parents, we have to learn a few new things. So we've got a few of the right nouns that set a little bit of context so we can actually carry on a conversation. And this is one area where parents need to remember they'll never have to be as technically savvy to help protect their child online. Parents have what children don't, which is a activated frontal lobe. Children's brain, the CEO of their brain, the frontal lobe, is not fully developed sometimes until they're 22.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you have a teenager who can write code and is terrific with technology, it doesn't mean you step away and you let them travel along without any adult interaction.
And I'm going to suggest something. I think, quite frankly, this sense of the kids, this is just a personal opinion, but the kids coming up really know a lot about technology. I don't think they do. I think they know how to use the internet. I think they know how to text message. But I, as an old fogey parent of two daughters, know 1,000 times more about the internet and technology than they do. But yes, they know how to work the internet. They know how to search the internet. They know how to use email. They know how to text message. But, you know, that's pretty much the extent. So I think a lot of parents say to themselves, I'm no match for my child regarding this particular venue. I can deal with, you know, the stranger at the playground. I can deal with the coach of the Little League team. But I can't deal with the internet. Yes, you can, because, you know, your kids really don't know that much more than you do. That's my personal opinion of parents getting over their fear of the internet.
Well, it's important to get over fears of the internet. Absolutely. But as a parent of boys who write code and mash together
really?
Files.
Really? They write code?
Absolutely.
Oh,
so,
geez. Okay.
You know, every parent
My
has
kids
to,
don't write code.
They have to overcome their own set of challenges.
Okay.
And mostly it's mental. Inside, because we don't feel necessarily comfortable about technology mm-hmm. and the terms about it, mm-hmm. then we might not feel that comfortable jumping in. But here's the reality. There are very few children who are victimized by sexual predators. But when they are, it is almost always because they are a child without an adult looking over and looking after them. And that child is talking to people online about sex. That's the big predisposer. So if you have a child who is talking to someone online about sex, that's like a big red flag. Just put a flag on top of their head that says this is a person who could be open.
But the principal issue here, and we've been saying this long before there was internet access, that the principal issue here is needing to have those channels of communication open with your child. And at 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, it's not a problem. 7, 8, 9. But boy, when they get into adolescence, when they become older, it does become difficult to manage that whole process. But manage you must. And that level of conversation and that openness and that plea, that promise that regardless of whatever happens to you, daughter, or whatever happens to you, son, come to me. I don't care what it is. You come to me and tell me about it. I will never turn you away. I will never push you away. I will always embrace you and I will always protect you. And to say that, what, once a month?
Well, I wish we had a magic number and we knew what each child needed always. But for a child to recognize that their parents care about them and care about what they post online helps to set the framework for a dialogue that will help in lifelong relationships.
And drug use in terms of sexual
Everything.
Encounters, in terms of homework, that does seem to be the key. And you know, there's not a lot of magic in life, not a lot of magic formulas. That does seem to be one, keeping that open line of communication with your children. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Marcely, sort of like parsley. I have to say that every time now. Marcely Hancock, the president of the Internet Keep Safe Coalition. One of the things that you want to do is to go to their website, which is www.knowwherethego.org. Marcely is operating under a Department of Justice grant from the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. They are wonderful people over there who are working hard on a wide variety of fronts in terms of getting the word out about not just internet safety, but child safety across the board. Now, the I Keep Safe Coalition, how did the I Keep Safe Coalition become involved in all this?
Well, the Internet Keep Safe Coalition was started primarily to help provide tools and resources for parents and educators to help children use the internet in a safe and healthy manner. So being able to help young children, particularly the early users, so the time to talk to children about internet safety, security, and ethics is as they use the technology. So you don't want to put a child on the internet, wait for 5 or 6 or 7 years, and then when they're in middle school or high school, say, oh, by the way, there's security risks,
right,
and there's ethic risks, and we have to talk about technology and that it's a public forum. You start these conversations very early. One of the most effective ways to do that is to help your child learn that everything done on the internet leaves a permanent digital record. It is a public forum, and there are many children and parents who don't recognize that everything you post online creates a digital footprint,
right,
a reputation.
Right.
And that's going to be either an asset for you or a liability in future academic and employment opportunities. But in specific relationship to predators, what you post about yourself and about the conversations you have, if you have a child talking about sexually oriented information, that is a huge red flag, and
mm-hmm.
predators are looking for that. They troll for that.
Yeah, they troll for that. They specifically let's talk about how they troll for that. What do we mean? So are they going on to MySpace? Are they going on to Facebook? Are they going on to Twitter? Are they going on to message boards where kids congregate? What are they doing, and where are they looking, and what are they doing?
They look where they have easy access to children. So any
child related site.
Right. Anywhere where they can become a virtual friend, where they can build a
anywhere where you can have a conversation trust with a younger individual on the internet. So it doesn't matter where it is.
No, that's
it could be
right.
Any place. It could be
and
a church phones, site for all we know.
Especially a church site, because anything that allows you to quickly develop trust
right.
It would be something that would be a priority for a predator. But here's some information that I thought was interesting. This week, Cosmo launched did a study that 1 out of 5 girls has posted a sexy photo of themselves, either through their cell phone or through the internet.
That's amazing.
1 in 5. I know. I have daughters.
That's
I was really shocked.
Inviting hundreds
that's
of
a red
thousands
flag.
Of individuals to comment. That's a very that is a red flag.
Well, it's a red flag not only because of the potential predator, but because those images are child porn. Mm-hmm. I had a great conversation with the district attorney in a state where he had multiple cases. So there was something close to 60 families. Over 20 arrests of children who had created their own child porn, so images of themselves. Mm. And there's mandatory sentencing and mandatory procedures when you're dealing with online sexual victimization of a child. So even if a child takes a nude photo of themselves, it doesn't mean they are exempt from mandatory
correct
pieces from the
correct
law. So for parents who have not talked to their child exactly what they mean by good use of their cell phone and digital images put up on the internet, those kids are at risk, and the kids that are at risk are the ones who feel like this is my private world
mm-hmm
with just my friends
mm-hmm
or with just people that I want to have contact
right
with,
right,
and forgetting that mom and this grandma and my teachers and
right
police and others have access to things that I put up on the internet.
It's like my daughter in an ice storm when she was driving a whole 2 weeks, and I told her that I would come down and get her, and she responded, why?
Right. No frontal lobe on that one. No frontal lobe on that one.
2 weeks driving, right, and it's an ice storm, and she's, right, why are you coming? This is embarrassing. I'm not a baby anymore.
Oh,
this
of course
is 2 weeks driving an ice storm where I don't have to explain it. And so kids have this inflated, unrealistic sense of their own sense of danger. They really do.
Well, that's the frontal lobe. So they actually physically cannot process risk. They don't have the capacity, and that's why parents must be engaged with their child's digital life. If you don't know what your child is posting, and if you don't know with whom they're communicating, that child is at risk.
The partnership. Again, how many people are involved in the partnership? It's the U.S. Department of Justice. It's the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. And I've got some real good friends over there, very wonderful people. It's the Internet Keep Safe Coalition. There's lots of other people involved in this, correct?
Yes. There's I Know Better from St. Louis. And okay, there's also the Hispanic Communication Network.
Right.
Have all participated.
And you guys have put
content
out some great public service announcements. I've seen them. Extremely impressive. I'm going to start using them in the television shows that we
great
produce here.
Thank you.
But I mean, it is just a wonderful place to go and get additional information at ikeepsafe.org. ikeepsafe.org. www.ikeepsafe.org. In terms of reading from the press release issued by the Department of Justice, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Forces, it says since the program's inception in 1998, the task forces have reviewed nearly 200,000 complaints, resulting in the arrest of almost 11,000 individuals across the country intent on sexually abusing children. In fiscal year 2007 alone, the investigations led to more than 2,350 arrests and more than 10,500 forensic examinations. And I have no idea as to the different people who are listening to those numbers right now, but that's an extreme undercount. That is not even the tip of the iceberg, because the great majority of individuals known to be victimizing children are not known to the criminal justice system.
That's true. That's correct.
We don't know who they are. And in some cases, it takes decades for them to surface, if it does at all. How many times have we had teachers who, great, honorable teachers, loved by the community, and suddenly something happens and the floodgates open and suddenly 20 or 30 people come forward to provide additional information?
Well, that brings up a very good point that many times a child who's been victimized online actually knows the perpetrator offline.
Ah, so it now is that's a something vehicle. Else I've never heard of. You're a wonderful interviewer.
That's a much more realistic scenario. So it's very rare, I mean incredibly rare, that someone actually reaches out, creates a false identity, and then tricks the child into meeting.
So
that just doesn't happen.
Using
like
using the internet as
another form of abuse.
Of additional confidential, so the child thinks.
That's right.
Form of contact.
So here's an example. There's a case in Virginia. The predator was actually a teacher at a school.
Right.
And he had a fake profile on a social networking site.
Right.
Where he lured young boys that he knew offline. So he knew these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he could entrap them. Mm-hmm. He says, well, you know, and now the boys think this is a very attractive girl.
Right.
And because he knows enough about them, he can create this sense of trust. And so he
doesn't necessarily have to identify himself. He knows these kids and
he gets them to do something stupid, and then he can blackmail them.
Ah.
So he gets them to send inappropriate images of themselves doing activities that would be, you know, put up as child porn. And then once he has those images, then he blackmails them.
But he presents himself as a girl. He knows
this
their
was a fake
circumstances,
page, right?
But he masks who he is, but he knows enough. He knows that this is a potentially vulnerable individual, so this will give me the opportunity of going after him or her.
So if a lovely girl that they think is a girl says to them, if you do ABC and send me a webcam image of it, then I will send back to you a picture of me at XYZ. So then boys without their frontal lobe in this area would be entrapped. And rather than tell, they would be victimized. But here's the tragedy, because it had been multiple victims of kids right in the very own same school. They didn't find him because of one of the children. They found him on a sting operation, just trolling, looking.
You know, again, when I was working for the state of Maryland, and when we were putting up a sex offender database, and I sat down with people who were experts in this field, and that's one of the things that they told me, that the trick here is to get the child, is to entrap the child.
Right.
And to create some sort of scenario that where the offender says to the child that, you know, now your parents are going to find you disgusting. They're never going to trust you again. You have really done something terrible. Where that adult suddenly becomes the keeper of the secret and the only person that the child can, in a sick sort of way, trust, because the two of them share
the
secret.
That's right. It's a tragic.
And they were telling me about, as far as they were concerned, tens of thousands of kids. We're not talking about a hard count here. It's nothing more than a guess. But certainly thousands of kids being held in psychological bondage by individuals who are child sex offenders, sex predators. And where that child will go through years from age 5 to age 9 to age 10 held in this unbelievable psychological entrapment,
right.
And at the same time being victimized by this individual. That is a burden. To say that no child should bear is today's understatement, but that is such a profound set of circumstances for that child to be in. And everything you're saying is that the internet is the new way of accomplishing that.
It's just the same. It's a new vehicle for the very same type of horrible things that have gone on with children in the past. It just provides another vehicle of entrapment for the child, particularly when the threat is, well, I'll make these videos public, or I'll make these images public, and it'll ruin your life, and all of your friends will know what type of person you are, and that you sent these to me.
And so you would rather die.
They would rather, they choose to be victimized rather than to
go through that level of humiliation.
Right. So this is where it comes to the parent. So what can you actually do to help catch that, or to intervene, to be able to step in and be a support, especially something like that scenario with the Virginia students. So, you know, you have a healthy boy, teenage boy, and he's going to do something stupid. Mm-hmm. So how as a parent can you intervene at the right time?
Tell me.
So here's a few statistics. There's over 60% of the mothers worry more about what their kids do online than they do about when their child walks out the door. So it's this overall anxiety, but only 48% say they have no clue what their child does online, and only 15% of them actually use software tools to help them. So here's the missing link. Parents have anxiety about what their child does online, but they haven't taken the time or the resources to invest a little bit of energy to find out, how can I work with my child to monitor what they do?
How can they do that?
They can buy software that allows them this. You can
Now, you say buy software, and there's a whole bunch of people out there going, oh, my God. No, don't tell me to buy software.
Well, there's also free pieces of software.
No. I'm simply saying that there's an intimidation factor in terms. Tell me about that.
Right. So parents can be intimidated by technology. But if you have children on technology, knock, knock, knock. Someone has to be the parent.
Okay, and you can always get Geek Squad. You can always get a friend to install the thing if you have an issue with that.
And help you learn to manage it.
What will that give you?
It will give you a vehicle of communication to let your child know that you're checking what they are posting online.
Okay.
And the reason is you want that child to recognize everything they post is public, and it will affect their future academic and employment. And you want that child to recognize that you care enough about them to help them make wise choices.
And to recognize that they have the frontal lobe issue.
Yes, you know, at our house, we do have the frontal lobe conversation.
And sometimes you have to step in and help them regardless of whether they want to be helped or not.
No, children never want to be interrupted,
and particularly
if they feel like the internet's their private world.
Right.
So if they feel that their chat logs are private, or their instant messages are private, or their text messages are private, they're completely confused. So a parent has overempowered that child to have them think that something done digitally is their own private communication.
Okay.
It isn't.
They can buy the software. What else can they do?
They can look.
They can look.
So checking. There's three.
Can they do that?
Absolutely.
As a parent, can you walk into a child's room and look at what they're looking at?
Good grief. You mean really, parent? Yes, absolutely.
There's
three good concepts that every parent needs to just settle into, take a little quiet time, and figure out how to do it within your own value system.
Okay.
The first is to keep current with the technology your child uses. You don't have to be a techno whiz. You just have to be current with the technology your child's actually using.
In other words, if they're texting on a cell phone, you got to...
Then look at it. Yes. I was at Washington State not too long ago, and the U.S. attorney had intervened. One of his... law officers had intervened. A mother had just happened to be reviewing the text log from her daughter's phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out a predator had been sending nude images of himself and had been developing this relationship with the young teenage daughter, girl, very young teen, early. And if the mother had not had taken the time to review the images or the text, the daughter would have voluntarily met with this adult.
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, the mother looks at the phone. She calls the police. The police assume the identity of the daughter. Now that predator is behind bars.
Good.
And a mother was doing what mothers do, which is checking in. You know, I look in the backyard if my kids are playing in the yard. I you know, it's part of the culture of what we do for parents.
We'll do it. You know, we know how to ask about our kids' friends. We know about asking where they are, what they're doing. And those sort of bullheaded, stubborn parents who get in there and fight for their kids, again, clear research is that they generally save the kids from doing a lot of silly and stupid things.
Right.
It helps, and it helps tremendously.
Communicating is that first key.
Right.
Keeping current is the first key. So the first is to keep current with the technology.
No, we said
communicating. Then it's communicating.
Okay.
So second is communicating.
Okay.
But you can't really communicate until you are current with the technology.
Okay.
So you have to do a little bit of homework yourself.
All right.
Talk to other moms.
Okay.
You know, it's okay to say, I'm not all that confident.
Or go to www.knowwherethego.org.
Absolutely go to knowwherethego.org. And the third is to keep checking. You check so your kids have this engraved in their brain that everything on the internet leaves a public record. You can never erase anything.
You post that racy photo of yourself.
It will be somewhere
will
in the cached
there
world
for
forever.
The rest of your life.
As long as there's electricity on the planet.
As long as there's electricity on the planet. That's a profound fault, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That what you post at 15
will be there
when you talk to your daughters.
That's
age
right.
32. You
know, it's a digital reputation that follows you everywhere you go. Every job application.
That's a great
way
of putting it. Boy, you have 10 tons of good points.
I have children.
That's great.
I've been practicing.
That's great. No, but I think that there's a lot of things that you've brought up today that are powerful, and that's one of them. You know, that image, whatever it is, it's not like they go out and do something goofy with their friends and that's it. It's done and over with, and it's simply housed in the memory of those individuals. With the internet, it's not. It's a permanent record that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life.
So here's how this plays out.
Wow.
So this is a true story. Young college freshman got the big baseball scholarship that he had been wanting all of his life. He won
Lord.
It. It was his first year. He was playing on the team. He was doing great. He went to a party. He was drinking a beer at this party, like a lot of freshmen do in college, mm-hmm. which is actually underage drinking, which mm-hmm. is actually illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But someone posted his picture with his beer in hand on a social networking site. The university was made aware of it. He lost his scholarship and dropped off the team. He was kicked off the team and lost his scholarship his freshman year.
There are profound implications for stupidity.
Well, but
you're looking at me. Wrong word. Wrong word. Okay.
No, but you're right. Kids do stupid stuff, but they need to learn really quickly from someone they know and trust, their parents, or someone else that has access to them, that what they post is going to affect them with future opportunities.
You know, Marcella, this is Marcelli. Boy, I keep blowing that. Marcelli, this is a fantastic conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, I really want everybody to go to their website, and that is ikeepsafe.org, internetkeepsafe.org, www.internetkeepsafe.org,
ikeepsafe.org.
And, you know, this is a profoundly interesting conversation. I want you to come back at our microphones. And, you know, I Keep Safe, and you're the president of the organization. You know, they're in league. You're in league with lots of other organizations, with the U.S. Department of Justice, with the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, in terms of an ongoing effort, wonderful PSAs, public service announcements, in terms of just doing something useful in the lives of kids and parents to keep them safe. And you've told me three or four things, me being in the criminal justice system for 40 years, you've told me three or four things today that I never realized.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, the goal is to help parents engage and know where their child goes online. So the website that has those PSAs is knowwheretheygo.org.
Marcelli Hancock, the president of the Internet Keep Safe Coalition. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. Again, we really appreciate all of the letters. We really appreciate all the emails. Anyway, we appreciate all of the suggestions. And keep them coming. And please have yourselves a very pleasant day.